Hello and welcome to NJ Biz Conversations. I'm your host, Jeff Kanige. My guest today is a great friend of the show, former state attorney general and now partner at Lowenstein Sandler, Chris Perino. Chris, welcome back.
Jeff, thanks for having me back.
Oh, well, thanks for coming back. I appreciate you taking the time. I was interested in talking to you today because of an op-ed you wrote for NJ.com. Essentially calling for what amounts to, a crackdown on illegal cannabis sales. You're calling on local prosecutors to sort of clean up this business. I'm curious, what got you interested in this? Were you hearing from dispensary owners? Were you hearing from local officials, from law enforcement? What prompted you to go public with this call?
Well, so there are a couple of things that happened. And initially, it was because of experience I had in New York State. I walked into a gas station and went to buy some Tic Tacs. And I looked up at the counter and there was this selection of, you know, intoxicating cannabis products.
Yeah.
And I asked the clerk, I said, you know, what is this? And she says, I'm not really sure, but it'll get you high. and then in Manhattan, I noticed there were literally these weed trucks driving around. And I said, my goodness, you know, of course in Manhattan, you walk down the street in Midtown and it smells like,
right,
you know, like you're back in college. And so then
you were back in college.
Not me. Yeah. Someone was back in college. But then I started poking around a little bit in New Jersey, and asking around and doing a little bit of, just sort of stopping in to local, bodegas and gas stations. And I saw a lot of the same thing. And I said, wow, this is really rampant. And there is very little enforcement, not no enforcement. There's definitely been some, but not much. And it struck me as, you know, when I was attorney general, medical cannabis was legal in the state and we were dealing with, regulating, you know, that business. We knew, recreational cannabis would be legalized based on the polling. And at the time, you know, I was kind of undecided, to be honest, about what the right policy was. Now, after having it been legalized, I've got some real doubts because the truth is it's not being regulated in the way that I anticipated it would be. When you walk into a dispensary today, dispensaries are very, very careful. They're checking ID, they're writing down names, they're not selling to underage people.
Right.
If you walk into a storefront, they're literally selling to just about anyone.
Okay.
And that is not what I believe the legislature intended. I don't think that's what the voters believed was going to happen when the referendum passed.
Mm-hmm.
And so I thought it was appropriate to give a heads up, frankly, to the local, not just county, but city prosecutors and law enforcement to start taking a look in their own communities to see how rampant this really is.
Okay. Well, there's a lot to unpack there. I wanted to start with, first of all, you mentioned the weed trucks. You mentioned those in the piece, seeing them in New York, but you're also saying you're seeing the same kinds of things that you saw in New York and New Jersey now, that sort of practice exists now in this state. Did I hear you correctly?
So I walked into a storefront yesterday knowing that we'd be chatting. In Westfield, New Jersey. Okay. And I said, I want to buy weed. And you know, the person reached behind the counter and handed me this. And I took the packaging off because I don't want to get sued by the store owner. But they sold me this and they sold me this, both different labels, but both appears to be the same. And from what I have been told and from what the packaging said, this is marijuana.
Okay.
Buds.
Okay.
Right there.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I the interesting thing about it is, and I heard this about how they do it in New York. They said, well, you can't buy it. It's a gift. The marijuana is a gift.
Okay.
And I said, okay. but you have to donate $70.
Oh, okay.
And then I proceeded to donate $70 to this store. And in exchange, I got two canisters of marijuana.
Okay.
I don't understand why that is not easy pickings for the Union County prosecutor or law enforcement in Westfield.
Right.
And the difficulty I have with it is not that I can go in and buy marijuana. The difficulty I have is they're not regulated. I don't know whether this product is safe or not. Mm-hmm. It's not been tested. I don't know this, but I would suspect that they're being less vigilant with respect to IDs, right, than the licensed dispensaries are. And it's untaxed, you know, and aside from the risks that concern me to people, adults and to kids, it's also unfair. You know, the legal businesses have spent hundreds of thousands of dollars, in some cases, millions and millions of dollars, to go out and get licenses and stand up stores and deal with the really heavy and very careful regulation of the CRC,
okay,
which oversees cannabis sales and cultivation in New Jersey. And these stores are just operating outside of that regulatory framework. And as I said in the op-ed, if I wanted to go out and sell beer out of my garage, the ABC would be on me in 2 seconds.
Right.
And there's reasons for that. It's safety. And also, it's not fair to the restaurants and to the bars and to the packaged goods stores that sell alcohol legally. Okay. And with marijuana, it's no different.
Okay. Now, how openly is this happening? I mean, you mentioned a storefront. Is it, does it say, you know, it doesn't say illegal marijuana for sale here. I mean, what kind of, I don't want you to get anybody in trouble, but
right,
these are places that would have just a general clientele, people coming in and doing their normal business.
Yeah.
And yet, so, if you know, or is that just it? You have to know, or is there some indication that you can do this kind of thing?
I haven't done a full-scale review. It's been more of a casual sort of armchair exercise for me. But what I will say is that they come in different shapes and sizes. There are the vape shops, some of which will also sell marijuana or cannabis products. There are convenience stores, you know, liquor stores,
right,
that are selling cannabis or cannabis products. And there are gas stations, you know, maybe not the large franchise gas stations, but gas stations that are selling cannabis or cannabis products. And so I think, look, it's only going to continue to proliferate, unless or until law enforcement catches up. And I get it. It takes time. I was, Attorney General not that long ago. But this is really something that the local prosecutors, I think, have an advantage on and shouldn't be that difficult to crack down on.
Okay. Now, I was going to ask you about who these people are who are doing this. If they're store owners or store operators, they are not people who were dealing before legalization, right? I mean, these are people who see an opportunity apparently in what is maybe not an enforcement priority right now. Am I getting that right?
Look, if it was happening, I didn't appreciate it. I didn't notice it. And it doesn't mean it wasn't happening.
Okay.
But I didn't notice it was happening. And, you know, it's way more blatant in Manhattan.
Okay.
And as I understand it, the trucks operate the same way. They say you can't buy the marijuana from us, but you can buy this CD with music on it. And you know, what kind of marijuana would you like us to give you? And then what kind of CD would you like to purchase? And then you purchase the CD, okay, and they gift you the marijuana.
Okay.
And that seemed to be the sort of approach that this place in Westfield was taking with me yesterday.
Okay. and the stuff that they're selling. I mean, it's definitely illegal, right? Because there are cannabis products that can be sold. I mean, you can buy cannabis products on Amazon if you want to.
Right.
But this is stuff that they should not be selling unless they're licensed to sell it. Am I that's clear? Yeah. The clear implication of what you're saying.
Right. And so there is an interesting continuum. There is the clearly labeled, you know, marijuana cannabis product that is, there's no question, is illegal to sell without a license. Then on the other side of the spectrum are the CBD, you know, oils and other things that are hemp products, not intoxicating, and are legal. Then there are products that are referred to, I believe, as Delta 8 products. They claim to be hemp derived.
Right.
And under federal law, those products at the moment are not illegal, although they are, it appears, intoxicating. So there is a continuum of, you know, what is clearly legal and what is clearly illegal. And some of these stores are selling products that are clearly illegal.
Okay. All right. Now, you said at the top that you had some doubts now. I mean, you have doubts about recreational legalization, or what sort of doubts has this created in your mind?
I do. You know, from a policy point of view, I was uninitiated, I think, back then, didn't have as good a sense of what was coming and what happened in some of the other states where recreational marijuana was legalized before New Jersey. But now, having seen where this product is available, again, on this sort of gray market in a way that's not regulated and not taxed, it's not something that, to be honest, I anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
I anticipated that, like liquor sales, liquor stores, and bars and restaurants with licenses to sell liquor would be the, you know, for the most part, only establishments selling liquor. Here, there are way more unlicensed stores selling cannabis than there are licensed stores. So the balance is completely out of whack. And, you know, and again, there are the safety concerns. I worry about kids and the industry. If you care about the industry, it's a little difficult to compete with an untaxed, unregulated store next to you. It right. just is, because it's cheaper, right. and you don't have to worry about ID, and it's just easier. Right. So I don't think there's a better answer than law enforcement being activated in this context to deal with it.
Okay. Do you think that as you mentioned that there aren't that many licensed dealers now, licensed stores now, dispensaries? As that changes, as the CRC gets ramped up and begins to approve more licenses, and these stores become, the dispensaries become more common, do you think that this problem might, you know, but when that imbalance may change, and eventually it'll be just as easy to go into the local legal license dispensary as it is to go into a gas station where they're selling you don't know what.
Yeah. So I'm not sure. I think it's always going to be harder for kids to get through the regulatory regime that exists and how careful these legal dispensaries are. So there's the underage factor. And I don't know how long it'll take for the legal businesses to become prevalent and prominent enough. But my guess is that just as they've had this trouble in other states, it's always going to be cheaper because it's not taxed.
Mm-hmm.
And the unregulated, unlicensed store didn't have to pay the tens, hundreds, and in some cases, millions of dollars that are spent by the legal operations to get licensed and to stand up a store and to have all the regulatory requirements in terms of security and cameras and everything else, testing.
Mm-hmm.
So it's always going to be cheaper. And in that context, you know, the free market, I don't think is going to solve this problem.
Okay.
I think it requires some enforcement activity.
Okay. Now, have you heard from anybody in the industry since your piece was published? I'm curious as to what, if there's been any reaction, because as you say, if this is essentially unfair competition for the legal side, you would think that they would be making as big a noise as you are. Although truthfully, I haven't really heard that much about it, but yeah. That simply may be our own blind spot.
Look, I had been sort of thinking about writing an op-ed on this subject for a number of months, and life kind of gets in the way, and it didn't have a chance to put pen to paper. And I said to myself, each time it would creep into my consciousness, I would say, this is going to become irrelevant very soon because someone else is going to write about it. It's going to become a focus, but it hadn't. Mm-hmm. I'm hoping that I can help bring attention to the issue. I don't know whether I'll be successful or not, but I have received a fair amount of outreach from what I'll call the either enforcement or industry side folks who are interested in talking more about it.
Okay. All right. That's interesting. And finally, on this subject, of course, one of the main driving forces behind legalization was the unfair enforcement, or the way enforcement had been carried out, it being uneven, targeting communities of color more often than not. Are you confident that this sort of enforcement activity can avoid those sorts of problems, which was kind of the point of legalization?
Yeah, look, I think the whole point of legalization was to clean up the unfairness right. to the extent it could be cleaned up. And these taxes are supposed to be collected and are supposed to benefit to some degree the communities that suffered this unfairness. Having, a gray market or an illegal market doesn't help that cause. And at the end of the day, I would like to think that my former colleagues in law enforcement will be sensitive to those concerns. But at the end of the day, the folks against which or whom enforcement will take place, not going to be the person who goes in and buys the stuff. Right. It's going to be against the person or the entities that are selling it. Okay. And I don't have a lot of sympathy for those individuals and those entities. And I think enforcement's got to step up and do what needs to be done there. And if there are social issues associated with enforcement actions against those who are selling, well, I'm not sure that, I have an answer for that.
Okay. Well, that's an interesting point and worth watching. Can I ask you about a couple of other unrelated topics that
sure, Jeff.
Lately. First of all, recently retired Supreme Court Justice Barry Alvin joined the firm. I'm always curious about what someone like that does when they go to work for a law firm. What's he doing for you?
So we're going to take great advantage of his brain.
Okay.
And his experience. And he started right away immediately after retirement. And I'm sure his family have encouraged him to take some time off and we're trying to force him to do that. But it's amazing when you have access to a brain like Justice Albin's, mm-hmm. It just like this gravitational pull toward it. And I find that he's being contacted way more than he should be when he ought to be, getting on with his vacation on matters that come up, day to day. Obviously, we had a very active appellate practice before Justice Alvin got here.
Right.
But I'd be lying if I said that we don't benefit in connection with the matters we already have from consulting with the justice and getting his thoughts. I don't think really there's a more experienced appellate lawyer in New Jersey, now lawyer, was a lawyer, then a judge, now again a lawyer. I don't think there's a more experienced legal mind available in the state. So that's one piece of it. The other thing that he's going to be doing is he's going to be acting as a neutral, mm-hmm. As an arbitrator, as a mediator. And I know that he'll be very effective in doing that. And the last thing he's going to do is he's going to be a lawyer, just like he was before he became a judge.
Right.
Justice Alvin, when he was just Barry, was an accomplished civil and criminal trial lawyer.
Indeed, yes.
And I know he's looking forward to getting back into that, and we're looking forward to watching him do it.
Okay, well, that's interesting. Yes, in fact, he had a very distinguished career as in private practice before he went on the bench. Now, his departure created another vacancy on the Supreme Court. There are vacancies throughout the court system. You and I have talked about that in the past on the federal side. Can you give us any sense for what that situation is like? Is it improving at all? And what are you hearing, seeing? What are you experiencing? What are your colleagues experiencing with the need to fill some of these spots?
Yeah, look, I had a hard enough time with that issue when I had a role in it. When I worked in the governor's office for Governor Christie, it was a difficult challenge then. With a Democratic governor and a Democratic legislature, you might have thought that it would be less difficult.
Right.
Apparently not.
No.
Apparently it's more difficult.
Right.
I don't have an answer, and I don't have a lot of visibility into what the fix is, if there is a planned fix. So, you know, I know as a practicing lawyer, we all want to see these issues get resolved. We want to see judicial vacancies, not only in the Supreme Court, but in the trial courts filled as well. I'm confident that the legislature and the governor will figure it out. But, you know, the sooner the better.
Okay. And finally, we just a little over a year ago, we spoke about the Newark Police Foundation, an organization that you had revived. I noticed you're still being identified with that organization in the op-ed piece and your bio in the op-ed piece. What can you tell us about what you've been doing over the past year, and do you have anything interesting planned?
Yeah. So with your help, Jeff, we went out and raised some money, which was I'm happy to say easier than I thought it would be. People were really supportive of the idea, which was to help police get back in touch with kids in the city of Newark. We designed a contest where the precincts competed to come up with the best community policing idea that they could think of. We funded that contest. The contest has now been completed.
Okay.
We judged the entrance. We were supposed to pick one winner. We picked two because they were so good.
Good.
And in September, we'll be announcing the winners, and those winners will be implementing their community policing initiatives, again, focused on police and kids throughout the year, all through Newark.
Oh, okay.
And we'll fund it.
Okay, good. Well, I hope you'll come back and tell us about that in September when the winners are announced and what kind of things you're doing. That'd be great.
We would love to.
Okay. Chris Perino, former Attorney General, State Attorney General, now partner at Lowenstein Sandler. Thank you very much, as always, for joining me. I really appreciate you taking the time.
Thank you, Jeff. Good to see you.
Good to see you, too. And thank you for watching. Until next time, stay safe, everyone.